Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. It's a great pleasure to welcome Holly Fretwell of the Property, Environment, and Research Center, PERC, of Bozeman, Montana. Recently, Holly and her colleague, Jonathan Wood, have published a new guide to American forests. It's entitled Fix America's Forests, Reforms to Restore National Forests and Tackle the Wildfire Crisis. Wildfire crisis, Holly, congratulations and good evening. Wildfire crisis is vaguely appropriate to the scale of this. In California in 2020, I covered these fires. They ranged right up to the edge and into the wealthiest parts of the state and also the most remote and beautiful parts of the state. The statistics say 9,600 fires burned 4.4 million acres, 4% of the state's roughly 100 million acres in California alone. You're describing something much more vast. These wildfires, do they weigh on the states where they range across, or do people shrug and say, business as usual, we live out west? Good evening to you, Holly.
Good evening, and thank you so much for inviting me, John. For sure, people feel these fires heavily, heavily when they come across the landscape. And even if it's not in your own state but another state, we are often suffering the smoke that's coming from other states. California fires, Idaho fires, we feel those here in Montana. And we had a number of fires here in Montana last year, one right in our backyard that took out 28 homes.
And these fires, I thought they're part of nature. You know, you read about Native Americans who had forest fires and they dealt with it. I thought it was part of nature, but it turns out, I learned from your book, it's not part of nature. There are federal lands, the number I have is vast, federal lands, 193 million acres of federal lands, and in those 193 million, you've identified 80 million that need attention. What kind of attention, Holly?
Well, they need some attention for restoration, but to be fair, fire is an inherent part of the forest, and it's a really important part. But we have managed our forest in such a way for the last 100 years that the fires that we see in many of our forests now, particularly on our federal lands, are just much more intense, they're much more severe, they're hotter, they're longer, they're more damaging. And we also have a number of people that are living along the edge of those federal lands, what we call the wild urban interface. And in that area, when these fires come in, they take out a lot of these homes. And so we need to do something, and we can do something. That's the point. We can actually manage fires. A healthy forest really is a human construct. We are the ones that define what is healthy and what is not healthy, and we are the ones that define what we want from our forest, and we can manage for that as well.
There are drivers for the wildfires that we have seen in the news these last years. What is the 10 a.m. rule? How does that work, Holly?
Well, the 10 a.m. rule is one that's been in effect for a very long time. And basically it says if the fire is continuing to burn, that we'll get out there at 10 a.m. to put that fire out. And one of the problems that we see is that we continue talking about suppressing the fires and putting the fires out, even though they are natural, and we're allowing those fires to take off instead of stepping back and years in advance, or at least a year in advance, let's start doing some restoration. We can do some forest restoration. We can remove some of the woody debris, some of the litter, as we call it, that's on the ground, that's the really flammable stuff, those pine needles and small twigs, et cetera, that actually get these fires to take off and to burn really hot. And once they get hot at the bottom, they just start to go up into the crown. And that's when we have some really serious problems. And again, we need to be fair. Some forests naturally burn that way, and some forests used to burn every 5 to 25 years. So those forest types that used to historically burn every 5 to 25 years are the ones that we really can do something to manage them by removing some of the small diameter timber and making them a more open landscape so that when that fire does get in, which is natural, it actually does drop to the ground and just burn that stuff on the floor instead of taking off and burning everything around it and then shooting out for acres and acres and acres and taking everything around in addition to emitting all that carbon into the atmosphere.
My reading of your book is that the drivers for these wildfires are man-made. These are man-made policies. And I want to explore those first because the solutions you have are rich, but we need to see how the policy got us into this place. The Forest Service over the last 30 years has evolved from a mix of foresters and experts and technicians to what becomes a fire company. It's dominated by firefighters. I don't believe that had to happen, Holly. Is that a product of the 10 a.m. rule? Did the forest firefighting create the forest fires?
We have definitely created a lot of these forest fires by continuing to fight fires and reduce the amount of timber that we're harvesting from our forest. What we actually see in our federal forest, on the national forest today, is that there is more timber that is dying from mortality than is actually growing. And we continue to reduce harvest, which is making that problem even worse. And as a result of that, we're seeing some of these big, huge fires. We've also reduced the number of staff entirely with the Forest Service. And in addition to doing that, we've taken the number of people that are actually what we call silviculturists or engineers and foresters, and we've cut them in half. And at the same time, we've more than doubled the number of people that are fighting fire. So when we hear this line, you know, from the Forest Service to the Fire Service, that's one of the things that we're talking about. It's just the whole change in staffing and culture of the Forest Service and of the agency that's moving us away from this good restoration and timber management and into really just responding to these fires as they come to us more and more regularly each year.
Is the Forest Service aware of this transformation of the service into a fire company? Do they know about it? Do they talk about it?
Absolutely. They talk about it. When we were writing this report, we worked with a number of different folks from the agency trying to get a better understanding of what's really going on there. And they call it a cultural problem. And you can measure the staff numbers and the differences in the employees and what types of jobs they're doing. But it's harder to measure the actual sort of cultural impact that's going on. And what we see is it always goes all the way back to our education. And the education system for most people that are studying forests now, they're really studying ecosystem services and watersheds and wildlife habitat, and they're studying less and less the actual silvicultural dynamics, and that is, you know, actually what's happening in the forest. How do we use these timber products? How do we manage for timber and ecosystems and wildlife and watersheds, and really looking at that whole picture and getting an understanding of what these timber products can do for us if we actually remove them from the forest. So we're seeing less of that and much more just of the ecosystem type of management and interest, and that is part of this cultural problem that the Forest Service feels, and agency personnel for sure understand that and are trying to make some shifts with that and trying to get better inventory of what's actually happening in the forest so that we can get a better understanding of what we can do with some of these products, especially some of the small diameter products that exist out there, that if we can remove them, we could add value. But right now, there's not a whole lot of certainty for some investor to come in and say, I'm going to build a mill because it's going to cost me $100 million. And if I'm not guaranteed or don't have a pretty good idea that the Forest Service is going to continue to provide me with this product, that raw material, then I'm probably not going to invest in that. So we have a lot of problems that are sort of stemming from the way the Forest Service has been managing in the last several decades.
Another driver, it occurs to me as an amateur reader, is that civilization is building deeper and deeper into the forest. And building into forests, and what I know is from California, I don't know if this applies to other states, building into the forest that itself, the forest itself, is not managed by the state or the federals to clean out that fuel. What you call the fuel in the forest sits there. People regard it as pristine, and the nature wants it. But doesn't I think that's the driver for these large wildfires and why the public reaction is so severe. They're living in the only thing I can imagine is they're living in a tinderbox. Is that a fair metaphor?
I think that's a fair metaphor. That what we call the WUI, the wildland urban interface, is actually growing rapidly. And in the past 20 years, it has grown larger than the state of Texas. And what that means is we have more and more people that are moving along the fringe of the forest, where they are much more at risk because of wildfire, because they're sitting right there within the forest or on the edge of the forest. And most of us, if you look at a picture, we look at a picture of a healthy forest and we think of, well, maybe I should just back up a minute. When you think of a really healthy forest, is it this green, lush, really dense forest, or is it this sort of wide open forest where you could actually walk through the forest?
Teacher, I'm raising my hand. I know the answer. I've read your book. Okay. it's the wide open forest where you have fields in between the healthy trees. Is that the right answer, teacher?
That's the right answer for many of our forests. Again, there are different forest types, but for many of our forests, but that's not what most of us want to see and are used to seeing. And so when you move into this wildland urban interface and you have this beautiful dense forest behind you, it's really hard to get out there and cut those trees down because that doesn't look right. That doesn't look healthy. But that's exactly what we need to do. We need to clear a space behind, around our house. We need to clear spaces within the forest. And it's not just right next door. That certainly helps. But if we get a wildfire that's, you know, a mile away, it can send an ember into your house. That's how big these fires are getting and how much they can actually send that risk of burning down homes and burning down neighboring forests.
We've established that forest restoration is a wise course, not only for the people who live near the forest or in the forest, but also for the Forest Service itself, which has had reduced funding and increased demand because of these wildfires. So what is to be done? I'm speaking with Holly Fretwell. Holly and her colleague, Mr. Wood, Jonathan Wood, have published a new booklet from a new pamphlet from the Property Environmental Research Center, Jonathan Wood and Holly Fretwell, entitled Fix America's Forests. That's what we're going to do when we come back. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.